Now, I mentioned the Areopagus, and we need to step back for a second and look at this body again and the power it was wielding by now. Because it seems that during the chaos of the Persian Wars, the Areopagus had recovered much of its earlier influence, and in fact, it was now administering the city again. According to the Athenian constitution, it was able to do this. It was able to administer the city, that is, because it had provided vital money to the fleet at the time of the Battle of Salamis. This was that major naval victory in 480 that had been masterminded by Themistocles. And so as a result of the Athenian victory at Salamis, the Areopagus piggybacked off that success and re-established its influence in political affairs. Now, the author of the Athenian constitution, as we said, probably a student of Aristotle, was against widespread popular power. And that's why that author goes on to say that the Areopagus was now governing the city well. This is meant to contrast with how Athens was being run, with how Athens was being governed in the age of these popular leaders with the mass of the people dominating assembly life. We've stepped back then to almost a status quo position in the time of Solon. Now in 487, as I think I mentioned a while ago, the method of electing archons had changed to the lot. This was the same method as electing members of the boule. So given the random nature of elections by lot, this would mean that non-nobles had a greater chance of being elected archon and getting into the Areopagus. Well, we don't have any idea about statistics, but any non-noble member of the Areopagus at this time must have been in a minority. And so these non-noble members of the Areopagus, those who had acquired the necessary wealth to stand for the archonship and been elected, they were probably very much in a minority in that council, dominated then by the aristocrats in it. So to all intents and purposes, the return of the Areopagus to political dominance in Athens was, as I said, a step back to the old time of oligarchy, where the Areopagus and the archons ruled in tandem. This apparent regression, for want of a better word, in the development of democracy and the influence of the moderate element in Athenian democracy anyway, and by moderate element I mean the hoplites, this regression was not appreciated by the non-nobles, especially the Thetis. The Thetis, remember, were the lowest group in Solon's four property groups. Now, the hoplites dominated assembly meetings, and the Areopagus came to be seen as a symbol of everything that democracy was against. And given Ephialtes' verbal attacks on the Areopagus that seem to have been going on for years now, he seems to have been setting himself up as some sort of spokesperson for the disaffected mass, for the Thetis. Since the people had been held in check before by the Areopagus, working in tandem with the Eupatrid archons, we might think that we're on the cusp of a return to pre-Solonian days. But far from it. Given the power of the people by now, especially of the Thetis, and that that power had been increasing thanks to the Delian League, there was not going to be any return to those days. Ironically, the imperialistic policies of leaders like Cimon, who were against widespread political power, these policies actually facilitated the direct democracy that Ephialtes introduced. This direct democracy in which the people were sovereign in the state. Now, aristocratic leaders wanted to try to muzzle the increasing political power of the people. But at the same time, they were keen to expand the Delian League. They were imperialists. They wanted to bring in more allies into the league. They wanted to promote Athenian hegemony over the Allies. They helped turn it into an empire. Now, we've traced the events that led to the League turning into an empire in a previous lecture. But by 462, the Athenians were prospering greatly from their empire, especially from the pharos, the tribute.